Trivati. I'm Brandon Sewell, owner of Seal Pro Painting in Central Florida and the host of the Off the Ladder podcast. We exist to help home service business owners learn so that they can lead well and ultimately live life off of the ladder. Today's guest is Colton Paulus. He is the CEO of Anchored Tiny Homes. He is doing some really big things. You might see him out there really taking a lead on leadership and business success. And it's really inspiring to see what he's doing. So, Colton, thank you so much for being a part of the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
I really appreciate it, man. I'm excited to dive in and fire away.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So as we were talking before the show started, I mentioned I had found you on Instagram, and I really loved some of the content that you're putting out there, you know, talking about leadership, success, talking about how you can have like this, you can have both worlds of like success in business, but you can also be a great husband, wife, father, mother. You know, you can have all of that. And, you know, there's these myths out there that if you have one, you can't have the other, or if you have the other, you know, something else is going to suffer. And, that's one thing that I'd like to jump into, as part of this, but can you give the listeners a background on your company, what you're doing? I see that, if I'm not mistaken, your goal is to hit 100 million plus, or you've already done that and you're aiming for more.
So we've already done that. So Anchored Tiny Homes. So as he mentioned, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Anchored Tiny Homes. Anchored Tiny Homes is an ADU builder, otherwise known as accessory dwelling units, granny flats, mother-in-law quarters. Think of them as backyard homes. So we're the nation's largest ADU builder. We're headquartered out right outside of Sacramento, California. Our corporate business does right around $100 million in annual revenue last year. And then obviously over the next 2, 3, 5 years, our goal is to get to, you know, 250, then 500, and then eventually a billion. But yeah, so we're franchising. Part of our strategic growth plan is to franchise this business model nationwide. We're already in 61 territories. So we have, I think there's 29 different franchise owners now in 29 different cities across the country. And all of them are starting to ramp up. We're getting them trained, getting them onboarded, and really kind of working them through the process.
That's awesome. So as I mentioned to you, you know, why I have this podcast is I want to help, you know, those home service business owners who are out in the field, they're working on their business. They have big dreams. You know, they're dreaming of building a company that's going to have a legacy and, you know, build something for their family, maybe something to exit at some point and really just be a financial blessing for them. But there are obviously hurdles that they have to overcome in order to get to that place. And I think a lot of guys and gals who start their business, bootstrap it, they get stuck in the field and they get trapped in some of these mindsets of like, well, you know, there's no good help. If I don't do it, nobody else can do it. You know, and there's all of these lies that I think are told over and over and over again and just perpetuated. And I think what I found in my own journey is that's just like a deflection, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're able to really overcome is when you stop saying, oh, I can't do this because of this. And you start saying like, what am I not doing?
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, I look at somebody like you, you're much more successful than I am right now. And I think to myself, like, to build something of that scale, like, you can't do it all by yourself, right? You have to overcome a lot of these, you know, mental barriers and things like that, that a lot of small business owners put up as excuses or, you know, the obstacles that they can't overcome. So can you speak a little bit about your journey of how, you know, where did you come from and how did you get into, you know, being an entrepreneur and what was that journey like? Could you go through some of your personal, you know, like hurdles that you have to had to overcome to maybe encourage those who will be listening to this?
Yeah, so I'll even take it back before Anchored Tiny Homes. So right outside of college, I got an insurance job, sold insurance for 6 to 9 months. I did really well. I was one of the top performing insurance agents in Northern California. But I kind of got gripped by the entrepreneur bug, like building something from the ground up and not just being like a sales rep for an insurance company. So I started over the course of about 6 years, I started and failed 7 different businesses. So a mobile app, a clothing line, a water bottle company, a platform business, a marketing company, all kinds of different businesses. I actually started and failed, and they didn't really have a ton of success. It was, you know, some had a little bit and then others didn't. So fast forward to Anchored Tiny Homes. Anchored Tiny Homes, we launched in 2019. And when I say we, it's me, my dad, and my brother. So part of what you're talking about, we kind of had a little bit of an unfair advantage where I can't even swing a hammer. Like I literally have to hire people around my house to build things, right? So I had the mentality going in of building systems and processes without me doing the work. So we kind of started that way. So a little bit about our business model is we do all of the marketing. Obviously we do the sales. That's what I did in the beginning, but then we partner with local general contractors to actually do the work. So we, from day one, knew we had a scalable business model and we wanted to build a structure that could support scaling that model. So we actually don't have any infield labor in our office. Everything we do in the construction world is through general contractors. So part of like maybe what people would consider my Achilles heel is the fact that I'm not very handy, you know. We're a general contracting business, but I don't have that skill set. My dad does, right? But he was older, so he wasn't going to go out there and swing a hammer and do the work. We had to get creative from day one and build the infrastructure to support the fact that none of us could actually do the work. And so I believe so strongly in what you're talking about. It's actually why I wanted to hop on this podcast, because I feel for people like the HVAC guy and the plumbing contractor and the painting guy, where they just get sucked into this rat race. And what they don't realize is if you just take a step back and hire someone to do the work, not only are you going to make more money if you do it the right way, you're going to free up your time. And if you don't take a step back, like I'll even take it one step further, you're never going to grow your business and you're always going to be in this rat race. You're going to have a bad back. You're going to be in pain when you're 50, 60 years old. You have to decide today to take a step back, build a real company. Right now, you're just an employee to a company that you own. You're not a business owner, right? And you have to make a decision to become a business owner, build systems, build processes that can scale where you could take a step back. You know, so not to get too much on the rat race of this, but I believe so much in what you're talking about, because I just believe you're never going to be able to scale a business until you take the day-to-day operations out of your workflow and begin to think on the business. Where are we going? What's our marketing strategy? What's our sales strategy? What does our brand look like? Who do we represent? How do we partner with local real estate agents to send us business? All of those things that actually grow your business. Are you spending time doing that, or are you just continually in the field, you know, swinging a hammer?
Yeah, it's funny because I have kind of a similar story that I own a painting company, but I didn't have any like hands-on painting experience. I mean, a little stuff here and there, but I never worked as a professional painter. So my background is I actually worked in full-time ministry, left from working in full-time ministry, and then I worked for a painting contractor doing sales and marketing. Oh, nice. And, you know, that's where I kind of got my foot in the door with the painting industry, was having that sales and marketing experience. And then the production was like the necessary evil. But I knew how to create a brand. I knew how to sell. I knew how to market it. So, you know, starting that for me was probably easier than, let's say, the guy who, you know, he's a craftsman at heart and he feels like, there's almost like an emotional connection to the work, you know, the craft of painting. Whereas for me, I don't have that. So I guess it's easier for me to step aside and let somebody else do the work. And it's even more so probably out of necessity, right? Like I can go out there and, you know, cut in with a brush and roll, but when you get into like spraying big 2-3 story exteriors, like that's just not my game. Mm-hmm. So I almost feel like I have an advantage there just in the mindset, like of being able to disconnect emotionally from like the craft itself. Now really quick, I want to rewind. You mentioned that you had failed at 7 businesses, and I have a similar story. I tried to do like my own. I had a background in art, so I tried to become an artist. I tried to sell artwork, both digital and like actual like painting and stuff like that, drawing. I failed at starting my own marketing business, oddly enough. Failed at, you know, multiple different things that I tried. But this just ended up being successful. Yep. Would you be able to go back and talk through maybe some of the reasons why those other businesses failed and how you overcame that failure and didn't let it like define you, and stop you from like moving forward to what was next?
Yeah. So I think, really it can boil down to one thing. I actually think all 7 of those business ideas were amazing. Looking back, if I knew what I knew now, obviously God had a different plan for my life, but I think I could build all of those companies knowing what I know now. And what I didn't know early on is the importance of marketing, of getting your product and what you're doing in front of people. Right. And I just thought like, oh, I'm going to build a mobile app and people are going to magically find it and download it. It's a great idea. Everybody's going to know about it. Right. Well, at the end of the day, nobody's going to know about it. Even this, these podcasts we're doing, like I've just started about 4 months ago doing a podcast. I'm realizing like, yes, the conversations are really important, but if I don't market it and know how to get it out there and know how to get it in front of people, nobody's going to see it. Right. So just the game of understanding the importance of marketing and getting eyeballs on what you're doing. So I think if it boils down to one thing, I think that's the biggest lesson I learned is if you don't know how to market, which is just getting in front of people, and then you don't know how to close contracts, which is the sales side, which I always had that, right? When I did Farmers Insurance, they would bring me the leads and I could close them all day long. Like that was my strength. The problem was I didn't know how to get the leads when I started my own business. And so what I learned with Anchored Tiny Homes early on is it was almost out of necessity. So I was, it was in 2019. My wife was pregnant with our first daughter at the time. Due date was October 3rd. She ended up being born October 2nd. We ended up selling our first tiny home in August of that same year. Right. Well, what I realized was I threw up a Facebook ad and 300 people reached out within the first 3 days, not a paid ad, just on Facebook Marketplace, literally Facebook Marketplace. And so 300 people reached out. And at that moment, it was my light bulb moment to say, okay, the game is marketing. If I have 300 leads of my own product, I could close some of them. Right. And I ended up, you know, a lot of them were like homeless people or So they weren't like a ton of good leads, but I ended up closing 2 of those contracts. One was like $90,000. The next was like 110. So $200,000, our first month in business. And then really we were off to the races. So I think what I can tell people is if you're in the trades, you're kind of in the day-to-day grind, the game is marketing. Like Anchored Tiny Homes is built on a marketing engine. We're marketing to franchisees. We're marketing to clients. Everything is marketing and branding and sales. The rest, and I hate to say this to people who are obviously in the trades, the rest is easy. It's pretty easy to find a painter to paint a building. It's easy to roof a building. It's easy to frame something up. What's hard is to actually get the lead and close the job. That's the hardest part.
Yeah, that's so good. And it's funny, like, as you were saying that, I was like reflecting in my own mind on the reason why some of my past businesses, you know, didn't work out as well. And, you know, that pretty much narrows it down. It's like being able to get that product or service in front of the right, you know, the people who are going to purchase, and knowing who those people are, right? So there is some Like, you've got to do some research. It's, you don't want to, you have to understand, like, okay, this product and service that I have, who is going to buy it and where are they?
That's right.
You know, and so it's not as simple as, you know, just like going making a bunch of noise, but it's, okay, this is what I have to offer, and these are where those clients are, and this is how I'm going to go after them. And then having some strategy of like, okay, well, how does my brand speak to those people that I want to purchase my product or service? Because that's a whole nother thing, is like, you could have a product and service, but what is your brand telling that that's person? Right. You know, how is it attracting them? Is it attracting the right customer? Do you know? I think when we talk about this, a lot of people refer to it as your avatar. Do you know that's who right. your target avatar is? Mm-hmm. And I think some people don't know that. So I'd go back and I would say, for those, if you're listening to this and you're in the field and you're wanting to get out of the field, these are things that you have to start to educate yourself on, and you have to begin to learn about. And that's why part of like my mission is helping contractors learn. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of guys and gals out there who it's like they want to go to the next level, but they don't realize how much they need to invest in themselves. So could you, let's talk about this. What did you do to invest in yourself to get yourself to that next level? Because obviously, like, you can't go from one place and have this level of success that you have without investing in yourself and educating yourself, getting yourself around the right people and in the right places. So can you talk about that journey of growth, personal growth?
So I'm a big reader, right? So I typically, on average, I do Audible a lot now, but early on I was reading about a book a week. So I would typically read a full book every single week, whether it was personal development, whether it was business strategy, you know, leadership, you know, really anything around personal growth, I would read about a book a week. When it comes to like the marketing and sales side of things, I knew early on, hey, if you get me a lead, I can close the job, right? And so I was the first salesperson for Anchored for, gosh, two and a half years. And I was the first and only sales rep. And I was, you know, closing multiple contracts a month. But what I did early on is we got creative. And what I can tell you guys on this podcast, you got to get creative. So I had a friend actually that I knew was a marketing guru. Like, he just knew marketing inside and out. He's now our CMO and runs, you know, our whole marketing department. What we did early on is I worked out an agreement with him, and I said, hey, if I pay for the ads, you know, out of the business, I will give you a percentage of every sale that eventually closes. So instead of staffing him for whatever, $150,000, $120,000 a year, I said, hey, we'll pay you a success fee on every lead that you bring us that eventually closes and signs a contract. So I didn't have the big upfront cost of bringing on a high level marketing guy, right? I had the ability to say, hey, we'll pay for the ads. I think we paid $5,000 a month in the beginning, but that was directly going to ads. That wasn't going to an agency, right? That was literally just paying for the Facebook and Instagram ads. So getting creative with stuff like that, even whether it's, you know, let's give a guy 2% equity, or let's do things that, let's get great people in the door that can help us scale. So part of our success is, you know, is Clay, is our CMO now, is his ability to understand marketing at a high level and really scale the marketing team. So that was one of the biggest things we did early on. I'm like, hey, if you can bring me leads, I'll close them. You can make a lot of money. And then obviously we can make a lot of money if you're bringing us enough leads. And then eventually there was a point where it was like, okay, let's bring him on. Let's pay a salary, you know, and let's recruit him to the team to actually join this vision that we have. But day one, I didn't have the cash to pay him. Like, we didn't have the money. So I had to get creative, you know, and that was the way we did it, was, hey, if I kill something, we all eat, right? If we're hunting, I kill, we make money, you get paid, we get paid, and it's a win-win, and your potential to make a lot of money is there as well. So getting creative with things like that early on, maybe you are a good marketer, but you don't know how to sell contracts. Well, bring on a sales rep and maybe pay him a really, really high commission to start, so you can get a great person in the door to start your sales business, or start your sales arm of your business. So anyways, I think great people, great processes, and just getting creative with getting good people in the door.
Are you a home service business owner? Do you have a strategic way to get reviews for your business on Google, Facebook, and other platforms? If you don't, then you need to implement NiceJob. Since implementing NiceJob, we have grown our reviews from 10 all the way up to over 60 reviews online in less than a year. If you're interested in using this feature in your business and growing your Google My Business reviews, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up for a free trial of NiceJob. And let me know if you sign up so I can help you to implement it and get a strategy in place with your team to get more reviews so you can start winning on Google and beating out your competition locally. Yeah, that's so good. And I think that it's important for those that are listening to this to understand, like, you don't have to do everything. Definitely. And I think it's one of the smartest people in the world understand that. And I think the most successful people understand that they don't have to, in order to build something great and to build something that is bigger than yourself, you don't have to be the one who is an expert in every area of that business. So, you know, it's like, I like to think of some of the biggest companies in the world. And I ask myself, I'm like, well, you know, you look at like the Jeff Bezos of the world, Elon Musk, you know, really successful financial people. They're not doing all of the little jobs in their organization. You know, they're the visionary. They're casting vision. They're bringing that mission and the values. Yeah. They're repeatedly, you know, driving that home for their team, but then they're trusting qualified and competent people to do their job, to do it well. And that's where that just accelerated growth comes from, because it doesn't revolve around you. And I think too many people have too much ego, right? It's like, yeah, I have to be the one who does this. If I don't do it, it's not going to get done. Or if I don't do it, it's not going to be right. And I think getting to that place where you can just let go, mm-hmm, and like in your situation, hire someone who has that marketing expertise. And in your own right, you might be great at marketing, but it's like taking that realization, like there could be somebody better, and it's going to free your time up.
That's the biggest thing, not to cut you off, right? It's like, what people don't realize, what I do now every day is I really am more like a visionary, kind of leading people and setting the direction of the company. That's it. And like, there's people, for example, right? So we just brought on a couple content people. One of them's here today, but like for me to try to figure out how to do content, that would be retarded. Mm-hmm. Like they're experts. They know what they're doing. They know how to edit stuff. Right. So why would I try to figure that out when I can hire people that, number one, they enjoy what they're doing, and number two, they're way better than I'll literally ever be at trying to do this. The same goes for marketing. The same goes for sales. Part of building a real company is just hiring great people in each one of their categories to do the work. And then you're just leading the vision and the direction and making sure the boat is going in the right way. You know, so I think that's the biggest thing, is not only should you not do it, but a lot of times you doing it, you're not good at it. And you should hire someone else to do it that's way better than you. You know, and mm-hmm, so that's part of becoming a leader, is just understanding that there's people that are 100 times better at certain tasks. And the second phase to that is that's actually what their vision for their life is to be good at those things. So you're not only like building a team to help support a big vision, you're actually helping other people fulfill on their dreams too, because that's the thing that they want to do with their life, is become great at their craft. So it's a win-win for both parties when you get the right people in the door.
Yeah, that's so good. Now, you know, I think that, you know, the other part of leading a great organization is leadership. It's the ability to lead people. Can you speak to that a little bit, and, you know, maybe some of your strategies and how you take that approach of like building a team? What are some of the things that you're doing to give people opportunity to get them excited about the vision and to really scale? How, I mean, and I'm sure when you're dealing with, I think you mentioned 61 territories, 29 franchisees, that's a lot of people that you're having to probably speak to and rally together and, you know, get them moving forward on this mission. What's your approach to that? How do you go after that?
So I think making sure the core values are locked in and dialed in, that's a huge thing. Making sure everybody understands the core values and everybody understands the vision and the direction that you're going in. But it's different at every stage, right? So like what I would say to someone is, it's going to be a heck of a lot different at a $5 million business than it is what we're doing, which is like this year, we think we can do a couple hundred million, right? So mm-hmm. I can't talk or lead everybody at this point. Like I just can't. So sure. I'm leading like our COO, our CFO, some directors, you know, so I'm leading like the leaders in the business. And then they, you know, I have to make sure that they go translate it to the team and lead people the right way. So it's different at every stage, right? But getting the right people in the door in key leadership positions early on that are bought into the vision, understand where you're going, want to go with you long term, that's probably the biggest thing. And, you know, a lot of people think that's hard. It is hard. But what I will say is, you know, early on when you bring someone on, this is the biggest piece of advice I will give. Get your ego out of it. So you like, how many people brought on someone and within 2 weeks, you're like, I know they're not going to work out. I know they're not going to fit the company's vision. I know they're not going to execute on what they're called to do. Just get rid of them. Like, I know that sounds harsh, but at the end of the day, like, you know, early on, and stop being so obsessed and egotistical about, I hired this person, I spent this much money with a recruiting firm and they're not working out. The best hiring is fast firing. Like that's mm-hmm. that's a harsh thing to say, but a lot of times, not only is it the right thing to do, it's better for them too. Because if they don't fit your core values and fit where you're going, they'll be better off somewhere else and give another company their best, right? So I would say the biggest thing is obviously getting people in the door. But then if you make the wrong hire, don't be afraid to fire.
Yeah, that's so good. The wrong people can really bring you down. So let's kind of shift. You know, one of the things that I was inspired by with you is, and you actually remind me a lot, I don't know if you know who Tommy Mello is.
Yeah.
Yes. So you actually remind me of him, like in like you have these big goals and big vision. And that's inspiring. And you know, I do too. Like my long-term goal is I'd love to make my company a national brand. That's like my long-term goal. How do you take something that big and tackle it? But then I want to talk about in that, how do you keep like a healthy, and I don't want to say balanced life, but like have margin in every area of your life. Yeah, you know, like yes. We talked about like having a great marriage, being a great father, being present. How do you attack a big dream and still keep those things in place?
I think a couple things. It's a perspective shift. So number one, getting the right people that can help you fulfill on the vision is huge. But I was actually studying, I forget who it was that said this, but they talked about how you don't, like a lot of people think of balance. They think of balancing time. So they're like, oh, I have to go to work for 6 hours. I have to spend 6 hours with my kids. I have to spend, you know, 5 hours with my wife. I have to spend, you know, an hour at the gym, and you have to balance the time. That's not the truth. You just have to balance impact. So you might have to work for a season for 10 to 12 hours, but you know what? When you get home and it's 6 o'clock at night and you're having dinner with your family, you better put up the phone and you better be there with your family. Mm-hmm. Like you better be present. You better speak life into your kids. You better like engage with your wife and be fully there. Because if you're not, you're actually working a longer day and you're like overflowing different areas of your life. So I like to think of balancing impact. So I might be able to only spend, let's say, 2 hours a night with my kids. And then I'm obviously on the weekends too, but those 2 hours better be impactful. And they can. Like I can tell them I love them 10, 15 times. We can go play on the play set and we can eat dinner together and we can have some really good quality time where I didn't need a 10-hour day. I just needed to invest a couple hours into that relationship. And so I like to think of it as balance, but balancing impact, not balancing time.
Yeah, that's so good. And not to be cliche, but I think of it like with my walk with Christ. You know, it's like it's not like I compartmentalize my faith and all these other areas of my life. It's that comes with me in every area of my life. So it's like I want to be, you know, not just godly at church or in a Bible study, but I want to be godly in my marriage. I want to be godly in the way that I lead my kids. I want to be godly in the way that I lead my business and my employees. And it's, you know, how I show up in all of those areas of my life. And that goes, it's everywhere. Right.
That's right.
And in the same way, I think of it with my family. It's like, well, I bring my family along for the ride. So it's like, it's a family experience. Like we do this together, you know, it's not, hey, this is dad's thing over here and you guys are over here. It's like, no, this is a family thing. So we even have times when it's like, I've got to get things done at night. Maybe I'm sending out like a big batch of handwritten thank you letters to our clients. And, you know, I've got to put stamps on all of the envelopes. Well, I grab my son's three, but he'll still come over and he loves helping put the stamps on every envelope, and my wife will help write out the addresses on all the envelopes. And so then it goes from like, well, dad's not over here in the office, isolating himself doing this. Right. It's, hey, family, we have this thing we're going to do, but we're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, we try as much as we can to do those things. I don't typically do estimates or sales or anything like that on Saturdays. That's like my family day. But if something comes up, because it does, if I have to go do that, it's like, hey, family, we're going for a car ride. You know, right. We're going to go That's do right. this together. Yeah. And then after that, we're going to go get ice cream or we're going to hang out. We're going to go to the park. And so I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you're going to do this alone and that's your thing. It's doing it together and just making everybody part of it. And I think that's how it can really thrive.
It's the family's vision too, right? So it's like, yes, it's your vision. Like you came up with the idea, but at the end of the day, it's your wife's, it's your kids. Like you guys are doing this together and you're the shareholders. And like, it's not just you doing this on an island by yourself. You're taking your family for a ride and they're helping and joining and really, you know, playing a part in that too. And ultimately they're the why behind why you do what you do anyways. So why not involve them in the vision and the strategy and even some tasks that you need to get done?
Yeah, that's good. So something that I wanted to ask you about, I saw this recently that you spent some time with Andy Elliott. Mm-hmm. Could you speak about what that experience was like, what you got from him, any key takeaways from what you might have learned from him?
Yeah, so I think the funniest thing was within 2 minutes of meeting him, he did make me take my shirt off.
So oh, that's funny.
Literally, like, so, you know, I don't know if you know a little bit about my story, but over the last 6 months, I've lost over 100 pounds. So I'm on this fitness Congrats. Journey, and my goal is to lose like 140, 150 total. And kind of like have this recreation story. So his first thing is he knew that going in, he's like, cause I'm flying there every month for the next 12 months to do a podcast together, like a free coaching okay. program. So anyways, he's like, hey, I know over the next 12 months that you're trying to lose more weight. So we're going to hold you accountable and we're going to take a picture together every single month over the next 12 months, of you losing weight. And we're going to have this transformation journey over the next 12 months. So it wasn't like a shameful moment. It was more like, hey, this is where you're going to go. And this is just a way to hold you accountable. So you have a photo every single month. But he is who you think he would be. Very intense, you know, like has a lot of passion for what he does. But behind the scenes, what I realized more is he just has a big heart for people and seeing people take their life to the next level. So you don't see that like in the content a lot, right? He's like very on edge, calls people out, you know, tries to help people go to the next level, which is his mission and vision. But behind the scenes, he's very likable, very friendly, and a lot more relatable than you think he would be.
Are you a home service business owner that is trying to get off the ladder and work on your business instead of in it? Well, you need a robust CRM that is going to help your business to be more efficient and streamlined so that you can get your time back to focus on things that are going to help your business grow. Now, Jobber is going to help you to manage your client requests, your quotes, your jobs, and your invoicing. You can do everything all in one place and manage everything from start to finish. And not to mention Jobber payments. You don't have to chase around checks, try to go and collect cash, or wait for checks to come in the mail anymore. You can just get paid right on the spot with Jobber payments. If you're interested in implementing Jobber into your business, click on the show notes below and sign up for a free trial of Jobber. That's not it. Reach out to me. I want to help make sure that you maximize everything that Jobber has to offer so that you can get your business growing right away. Thank you so much, and let's get back to the Off the Ladder podcast. Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think that it's easy for a lot of people to criticize what they don't know or what they don't understand. And I think, you know, he probably gets some of that, you know, when you see just like the online stuff. But I mean, when you really think about it, you know, and I think about my own life, the people that have helped me grow the most are the people that aren't afraid to confront mm-hmm. where I need correction. That's right. And what I found too is it's those people who care the most, totally. Right? Because it's easy to just feed people what they want to hear, and to, you know, just make it really pleasing to their ears, and, you know, feed into their own ego and stuff like that. But it really takes leadership, compassion, and, you know, genuine care for somebody to call them out for where they're at. So I have a lot of respect for him. And, you know, so when I saw that you were meeting with him, I was like, man, that's gotta be quite the experience and you know, probably intense, but also pretty rewarding.
It was cool. And it's we're going to do this over the next 12 months. So it was really cool. It was like a dream fulfilled that I wanted to do. He's going to maybe help coach our sales team and do some stuff for the business side of things too. But it was really cool. And to elaborate on what you're talking about, I mean, not to get too spiritual, but how many times in the Bible did Jesus say, repent and change your life, right? Like stop mm-hmm. doing what you're doing, go and sin no more, right? He constantly did these things. He called out the sin. He called out where the people were headed in their life and said to change. So why are we so afraid when people tell us to change? Why are we so afraid when people say, stop overeating or stop drinking on the weekends? That's the people that care about you the most. Literally, the God of the universe came on earth and told people to repent of their sins. Stop sinning. Go and sin no more. And it's like, okay, now other people are trying to call us out for things we're doing wrong and we're afraid to hear it. You know, I think there's two approaches you can take. You can get offended and have that heart posture where you're like, no, I don't receive this. Or you can say, hey, maybe he's trying to help. Maybe he is trying to help me go to the next level.
Yeah. That's so good. I can't remember the verse in Proverbs, you know, verbatim, but essentially what it's talking about is this, is it talks about how, you know, like the truth is better than a lie from a, what does it say? Better the truth
from an enemy,
from
or
a friend.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like a sweet, I don't know. Anyway, I'd have to look it up to tell you what it is verbatim, but it's exactly what we're talking about.
That's right.
You know, so I've got a lot of respect for that. And, you know, for myself, I find myself on a very similar journey to you as far as like fitness and health. Mm-hmm. It's funny. My wife is actually in the fitness industry. She's ridiculously fit. She was a D1 athlete. And when I was younger, I grew up surfing and, was super ripped and really fit. And then I went into full-time ministry and just did nothing but work, like just crazy, like 7 days a week for 6 years, and put on weight. And now I'm on this journey of trying to lose it and get back in shape. So, you know, waking up at 4 in the morning and getting to the gym, working out. So I think that's a huge part too of our success is investing in ourselves, like in that way, our health, mental health. I think that, you know, I've had the opportunity. I have a lot of guys that'll come to me and they'll want help. And there's a few things that I always see and that are symptoms of greater struggles is their marriage. Like if they don't have a strong marriage, that's an issue. You know, personal finances, you know, physical health, you know, all of those like foundational things make a huge difference in how you show up as a business owner, you know, like investing in yourself. You know, guys will come to me and they're like, hey, you know, I want help to grow my business or to, you know, go to the next level. I'm like, well, what are you reading? What are you listening to? Oh, I don't read. I don't listen to anything. I'm like, how do you expect to grow as a person, as a leader, as a business owner, if you're not willing to invest in yourself?
For sure.
And, you know, so it's like, I think a lot of people who may be listening to this, who want to go to that next level, it's like, start there.
That's right.
You know, start at home with your family, invest in your marriage, invest in your family, invest in yourself to grow personally. And that's going to translate into your business success.
That's right.
I want to be respectful of your time. I know that we're kind of coming up to the end of this. I want to just kind of, open this up, like for you, to share what you, maybe a last thoughts or final remarks on what you think would be some of the most valuable or insightful advice, to somebody who is wanting to, like we said, grow their business, go to the next level and have really great success.
I would say what we talked about just now, right? Which is in order for your life to change, you have to get better. Like that's the number one thing. You're the business owner. You're the visionary. You're the one that's going to make sure your company grows. And if you don't have the skills and don't have the wisdom and don't have the leadership ability to build a team, you know, John Maxwell calls it the law of the leadership lid. I don't know if you've heard this concept, but let's say your leadership skills are a 6. Well, your business is only going to get to a 5 because you're the cap on your business. So step one is to go from a 6 to an 8 and then your business can get to a 7, right? So the first thing you need to do is read the books, right? Get in the gym, grow personally first, and then your business can succeed. Learn the marketing skills, learn the sales skills, right? And hire the right people on your team to do that for you. But if you don't change, your life won't change. If you don't grow, your business won't grow because it can't. It's the law. It's literally a law of the leadership lid where if you're at a 5 or a 6, your business is not going to surpass where you are. Even if it does for a season because you got a lucky large contract, you'll find a way back to where that is. So step one, and the most important thing for you to do in your life is for you personally to grow spiritually in your fitness, in your relationships, and in your business knowledge and wisdom and leadership. Because if you do those things, right, you'll be able to take your life to the next level.
That's so good. As I'm listening to you, somebody who's, you know, aspiring to the level of success that you've had, some people might ask, is it worth it? You know, they might be listening to your story. You've invested heavily into growing a great organization. You've probably faced a lot of challenges along the way, maybe even wanted to quit at times. I know for myself, I've been, you know, as a small business owner, had just those moments where I questioned what I'm doing, maybe even being driven to just tears, you know, or just facing really hard times. Can you speak to that? Can you maybe give some people some hope to keep pressing, to keep striving, and you know, trying to grasp that dream that they have for their business?
I would say for the right person, it is absolutely worth it, because for one reason, this is what you were created to do, right? So like for me, regardless of the obstacles, regardless of what comes against me, comes against the company, I knew that I was put on earth to build this business. And so I know that God's going to be with me. And at the end of the day, it is worth it because it was why I was created. But it's going to be the hardest thing that you ever do. And I don't want to tell people it's this fancy thing. Like you might see social media of people building big businesses. It's very hard. Lawsuits, contract. We got ripped off for $750,000. There was days early on where it was like, are we going to meet payroll? You know, it's like just things like that where it's like, it's hard and it's stressful and it's a burden, right? But like I said, for the select few that this is literally why you were created, you just got to push through, because God is developing you and you're taking your life to the next level through those hard times. It's through the stretching and the expansion of your being and your skills that you actually take your life to the next level. So I would say, yes, it's 100% worth it now, but you have to, I heard this leader talk about this. I forget who it was. I'd love to give credit if we can drop it in the notes, but he said, you're either a builder or a climber. And it's funny because we're in construction, but there's two routes, right? If you're a climber, and you just have to identify who you are. A climber wants to go as high as humanly possible, and they want to take their business to the massive heights, build a multi-billion dollar business, whatever that goal is, right? And if you're that, then you do need to go down that path. But if you're more of a builder and you want to have time freedom and you want to have relational freedom and you want to have high income, but you want to be able to golf on the weekends or go hunting, that's also a path for people. So you have to identify, do I want to be the climber, that this is literally, I want to take this as far as humanly possible, or do I want to build a $5 to $10 million business or 3 to 10 million? And we're spitting out high profit. I'm making great money. I'm able to, travel when I want to. You just have to decide who you are. Not everybody was created to build a 100 million or 500 million or $1 billion business. And in fact, I think you'll be depressed if you try to do that and that's not your calling. So just decide who you are. I will say for me, yes, it's been worth it, because I do believe this is why I was created, and I love business. I don't have a lot of other hobbies. Like I just love the game of business. Like I don't golf. I don't do any of that because I enjoy business and it's just what I like. It's my hobby, is to think of ideas and strategy and vision and actually build these companies. So I think it's two-prong approach, right? It's either you're a builder or a climber, and figure out who you are and then go down that path.
Yeah, that's so good. I think when you have that clarity of identity, and you understand who you are, that's when you can really start to make a bigger impact and really start to really walk in that fulfillment of your calling. So I really appreciate what you've brought to the audience today and just the value there. And just if you're listening to this, I encourage you, take massive action. When you listen to these podcasts, it's easy to get inspired and to, you know, feel like this, be uplifted. But it's a whole nother thing to listen and then to take action on what you're listening to. So if you find yourself in that place where you are that business owner who wants to get off the ladder and you want to start to build and grow your business, start implementing these things that we're talking about. Start investing in yourself. Start investing in your personal life and really start to strategize how you're going to grow your business. And then take that leap of faith. The worst that could happen is you'll fail. And at the end of the day, you just learn from that and keep going to the next level. Let's get after it. Thank you so much, Colton, for being a part of the Off the Ladder podcast. Go and check out Colton on all of his social media. He's on Instagram. I know you can find a lot about him there. And if you're listening to this, please go on to, if you're watching from YouTube, like, subscribe to the channel, turn on notifications, share it with somebody else, drop a comment. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please rate and review the show, share it with somebody else so that they can glean from the amazing wisdom that's been shared today. And I'll see you next time on the next episode of the Off the Ladder podcast.